Excuse me, the recordings have started.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the BC Members Call on June 9th, 2016. On the call today, we have Jim Sinalufier, Chris Wilson, John Berard, Andy Abrams, Isabel Rutherford, Arinola Akinyemi, Tim Chen, Tim Smith, Carl Schrodenatter, Steve Del Bianco, Hiba Hussein, Cheryl Miller, Susan Kawaguchi, Philip Corwin, Denise Michelle, Angie Graves, and Beth Allegretti. We have apologies from Marie Petullo, Cecilia Smith, Jay Sadowski, Steve Coates, and Olga Yaguas. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Chris.
Thank you, Chantel. Thanks, everyone, for participating on today's call. Some actually very important activities just come about here in the last hour here in Washington with the NTIA announcement regarding the IANA transition and the CCWG proposal. I'll let Steve talk more about that a little bit later, but a lot to get to and as we ramp up to Helsinki here in just a couple of weeks. So Steve, maybe I'll go ahead and turn to you and the policy calendar, and then we can move forward from there.
Thank you, Chris. Chantel, if you don't mind displaying the policy calendar, appreciate it. Thank you very much. Folks, I sent this out on Tuesday. In the recently filed category, I only have one minor update. As you know, back on May 21st, we filed comment on the new ICANN bylaws. Several of our comments were accepted, a few were not, and we were among 31 who posted. Now, the ICANN board approved slightly amended new bylaws from those comments on the 27th of May. Did indicate, though, that those bylaw changes don't take effect until termination in the IANA contract. And as I indicate, this was really not our expectation based on what the board members said in Marrakesh. The CSG pressed the board on our Tuesday meeting and suggested that would the board implement the new accountability measures or wait around for NTIA to terminate the contract. Well, Shireen Crocker, Bruce Tonkin were among the three board members who said no. The community has spoken clearly. The train has left the station, and we're going to implement. So it was a surprise that all of the bylaws, all 300 pages of the bylaws changes, don't take effect until the transition of IANA contract. We'll get near the end of the policy section. We'll discuss a little bit more about the timing and potential roadblocks to that transition. But if the community has spoken and the board acknowledged it, we fully expect the new accountability measures to go into effect. A back and forth with the ICANN board resulted in Bruce Tonkin suggesting that if the NTIA transition were significantly delayed or derailed, that the board would work with the community to determine how to implement the bylaws effective now, other than those that are dealing with the IANA functions. So there's some complexity there. I have to give the board one bit of acknowledgement. The complexity of taking that 300 pages of bylaws and figuring out which elements could take effect now and which others were contingent upon the NTIA contract going away, that it's not trivial, and we were certainly short on time. But we're going to keep the pressure up if, in fact, it looks like we're going to have a significant delay. Now, Chris, I know you brought it up at the top of the call, and I would defer to your judgment whether you want to dive into the transition news right now or have me go through the rest of the policy calendar. What's your preference?
Well, since we're already sort of talking about it, why don't you go ahead and provide the state of play, and then we can dive into the rest of the calendar. Maybe that makes sense.
Yeah. Great. All right, so a lot of you watched or read about the hearing in the U.S. Senate on May the 24th. I participated in that hearing and did my best to educate members about the contours of our accountability proposal and to specifically respond to concerns that were raised about ICANN leaving the U.S., governments getting more control, concern about human rights implementation and enforcement, and a handful of other concerns that were raised by members of Congress. And we did our best to address those, but it didn't necessarily satisfy some senators. And there's also a political element, and if you're a senator and you're used to, I guess, criticizing the administration, this is certainly a move that the administration is vulnerable to criticism about. That is to say, the move from March of 2014 to simply terminate the IANA contract before it had fully run its extension course. So a couple of events. Yesterday, Senators Cruz and Langford, along with Representative Duffy in the U.S. House of Representatives, introduced legislation that had two parts to it. One part of the legislation said that you can't give up IANA unless there's a certification that .mil and .gov are permanent and exclusive property of the U.S. government. This should be no surprise to anyone. When the Internet was created, .mil and .gov were the U.S. .mil and .gov. Every other country puts its mil and gov at the second level, mil.uk, gov.ca. And so the U.S. is in a unique position of having really no significant permanent control of mil and gov. So I brought this up in the hearing as well, and the paperwork is already underway to give the U.S. Department of Defense and General Services Administration permanent control of .mil and .gov. So that's half of what's in the Cruz legislation. The second half of the Cruz legislation suggests that Commerce cannot relinquish the IANA contract unless the U.S. Congress says that they can. That's a very challenging position to take. It's not a delay. It's an infinite deferral of the transition. And when the legislation gets to the floor, if it does, it's difficult for members of Congress to vote against a bill that would give them the right to vote on something. So this may end up being dragged into partisan politics between Republicans and Democrats who want to defend the administration. I'm not certain there'll be any substantive discussions at this point, because the substantive concerns about human rights are addressed. The substantive concerns with regard to the role of the government are abundantly addressed, that we have in fact contained and limited the role of governments in the new transition proposal. And of course, the U.S. headquarters of ICANN is cemented into the Articles of Incorporation, not just the bylaws. So this is going to be a very challenging time in the Congress. So the only other thing I'll add is that this morning at 10 o'clock Eastern time in the U.S., the Commerce Department released its long-awaited report on day 89 of their 90-day deadline. And they concluded across the board that the IANA transition and accountability proposals meet all of NTIA's criteria for the transition. They also implemented a 60-page framework on examining the transition from the GAO. And finally, they added the corporate governance experts at the Berkman Center at Harvard University issued a report that concludes that our accountability measures would effectively prevent capture, particularly by governments. So that would set into place the timeline between now and mid-August, when Congress will take a long, hard look at all this. And although Congress goes on recess on July 15th, that still gives the Commerce Department another month to let ICANN know by August 15th whether they intend to extend or terminate the contract at the end of September. And those extensions could be a month or two to take it at the end of the year. It might be several months, a couple of years, to get it to the 2018 hard stop on the IANA contract. A lot of political balls in the air, and Chris, I would be happy to take questions. I think Phil is first in the queue.
Go ahead, Phil.
Yeah, thanks, Steve, and I'll be brief. By the way, Steve, is that Berkman Center report, is that out? Do you have a copy of it?
I'll send that around.
Okay, because I haven't seen it. Yeah, I just want to comment. I don't think, the Cruz legislation or anything similar is going to pass, and if it was, it probably would face a White House veto. I think the real game here is that this is becoming more partisan, which isn't that surprising in a presidential election year. And no matter what Congress says before they go out of recess, the real game is in the appropriations committees. It seems pretty clear with the announcement by 16 conservative groups that the House, if they pass a freestanding Department of Commerce bill, it's going to contain the freeze, the one-year extension of the freeze that's in there. I don't know if the Senate will do a freestanding bill. Last year's extension made clear that a continuing resolution that to fund the Department of Commerce would not extend the freeze, so it's all going to come down to whether they Congress passes an appropriations bill in September for commerce that contains a freeze extension. NTIA is on the record saying that does stay their hand, but that may not be the White House view. So it's all going to get very political, I think, and I'll stop there.
Thank you, Phil. The question of funding is an open question. It's not at all clear that money needs to be spent to terminate a contract. The entire Commerce Department can just stay home from work on September 30th, and the contract expires of its own. However, the money that was spent to evaluate the community proposal might well have been challenged in Congress by saying they spent money on the transition. The answer that NTIA will probably give is that Congress, in writing, has asked the Commerce Department to evaluate the proposal. They've asked the Commerce Department to report to Congress on the status of the transition, so that $20,000 they spent with the Berkman Center might well be in service of their reply to Congress. But we shall see. There are many arguments that could be made. Any other questions on this? All right, Chris, why don't we dive back in, if you don't mind, to the policy calendar.
Actually, Steve, I think I see Denise's hand raised. Sorry.
Are you on that? Go ahead, Denise.
No, I was late. Sorry, and I had to dial back in, so I apologize if I missed the discussion about this. Did we discuss a follow-up on the apparent change or evolution of the board's position on implementing bylaws now, particularly those that relate to accountability rather than directly to the IANA function?
Denise, we followed up immediately and got the explanation that the board is committed to work with the community to bifurcate the bylaws into those things that can be implemented now and not. But they don't want to take that step, nor would I suggest that they do. They don't want to take that step unless it becomes clear that we have a significant delay in the transition.
Okay, thank you. Thanks. Apologies.
I concur with that. It would be, it's a big job. Thank you.
Right. Thanks.
All right. Back on the policy calendar, we'd only have a few public comments that are open right now. Because as you know, in the walk up to an ICANN meeting, staff tries not to bury us with new comments to prepare, since we're all preparing to get together. So the first one is the comment on the release of some geo names in three dot brands, Hyundai, Kia, and GoDaddy. And those comments closed today. I circulated 2 weeks ago a draft prepared by Andy Abrams. And Andy, thanks again for doing that. The comments are substantially equivalent to ones we've done on a dozen other dot brand geo name releases. Unless I see any objection, I'm going to post it as soon as we finish this call. See no objection, I'll go to number two. This bears a little discussion here today. It has to do with ICANN's proposed revisions to the expected standards of behavior. And those standards of behavior are there to cover everyone who's participating in ICANN meetings and ICANN processes, to cover the ICANN staff, board, and everyone related to ICANN. Because there was an incident of a sexual harassment incident in Marrakesh that provoked quite a bit of outcry on the last day of Marrakesh, ICANN's board and staff then have added a paragraph to the expected standards of behavior. That's on the screen in front of you. And Denise Michelle was asking about where did they get this anyway, and it was taken from the IETF's anti-harassment standard, and that IETF standard with a couple of small additions, but in general, it's a pretty much of a standard statement with respect to what's not in harassment. So the BC has an opportunity to comment on that language. I can answer questions about what it means, but the BC may or may not have a concern, and I don't believe that ICANN is expecting a lot of comments on this, but let's take a cue. Who believes we should consider commenting on the new language? Denise, I see your hand up.
Yes. So I was hopeful that the ICANN staff would conduct due diligence and provide useful language and supporting documentation on this. It's not that I have a problem per se with this language. I think, however, that ICANN should provide additional context and sort of implementation support for this language. It's rather vague. It's pretty clear they really didn't do much in the way of investigating sort of international best practices of dealing with harassment and this type of behavior. So I think I'd be happy to draft a short note just asking ICANN to follow this up with, you know, with more clear guidance examples and more robust implementation material so people from different cultures around the world can understand what this language actually means. Thanks.
Denise, those are really great points, and thank you for volunteering to take that on. The ICANN version of this has two new words that were not in the IETF, the word ethnicity and medical condition. So those are the list of protected characteristics. But you mentioned examples, Denise, and in the IETF version, I think I sent a link to you yesterday, in the IETF version, they do list some examples. For instance, the use of offensive language or sexual imagery in a presentation and display, degrading verbal comments, deliberate intimidation, stalking, harassing photography or recording, inappropriate physical contact, and unwelcome sexual attention. So is that what you have in mind in terms of listing examples? Got it.
Yes. And
so Denise, all those examples are in the IETF link that I sent you.
Yes. Thanks. I think this can be handled rather quickly. Thanks.
Beautiful. And you're right. It was selective. It was selective on the part of grabbing some of the IETF harassment policy, adding two words, and then dropping all the examples. So I think you're right on. Any other comments? Phil Corwin.
Steve, I have no objections at all to the proposed language, but I think it would be useful for the BC to make an inquiry about how this will be enforced. I mean, if someone in the community alleges that someone on the board or staff or another community member has engaged in harassment that's covered by this language, what is the process? Who will investigate the charge? What punishments are available? This is all completely silent on that, and that's the really we want certainly the words to have meaning and to be enforced, but we also want an enforcement process that's fair and objective. So I think we should be raising some questions about that.
Phil and Denise, when we do that, we'll have to look into the standards of behavior and see where they fit in to ICANN's documentation so we understand what the complaint and enforcement process is. It might just be the ombudsman who has already gone on record as supporting this new statement. But it would be helpful to all BC members to understand, well, what does one do if they feel that the standards of behavior have been violated? Where do they go? I think that would be really helpful. Thank you again. So, Denise, you're going to take a look at that. Andrew Mack is in the queue. Go ahead, Andrew.
Steve, just a quick question. One of the things that I have been told on a number of occasions by people attending the conferences is that many of them are not very accessible for people who are disabled. A lot of staff, and I'm just wondering, is that something that's envisioned under this new policy, that we would try to make an effort to increase accessibility, and what impact would that have, and are there budget implications?
Yeah, well, the word disability is right there in the last sentence, and it's
the
IETF.
What the practical impact would be, that's all.
All right, so I think Denise just brought that up, is they're going to ask about the enforcement mechanisms, but you're asking about another aspect, a practical aspect. Does this require budget for disability access? Is that your question?
Yes, I think budget and also you know, whether that's how someone requests, or does that factor into how we choose where we're going to go, things like that.
Got it. All right, let's raise that as a question. Denise, when you finish your draft, Andrew, would you please take a look at that and help to add a question about that, if you don't mind. Denise will get something turned around in the next few days. This one is due on the 25th of June, so we've got a couple of weeks. All right, great comments all. Thank you. The number three on this is the revised Articles of Incorporation. As you recall, the BC insisted that the new articles be published at the same time we published the bylaws, because the articles are where we build in this notion that ICANN shall have its principal base of business in California. It should be a California nonprofit corporation. And no changes to the ICANN Articles of Incorporation can occur without the consent of the empowered community. This was a fundamental part of the report we came up with, and yet ICANN hadn't bothered to have their attorneys mark up the two pages of Articles of Incorporation. So we pressed on this, and ICANN immediately conceded and came back with the revised articles, and they did, in fact, match with what we asked for. So we have an open public comment period until the 6th of July. I'll be happy to start the draft on that unless someone else wants to jump in. Okay. Fantastic. I'll go on to the last one. There's proposed amendments to the new GTLD's registry agreement. And this is the base agreement that all of the new GTLD registry operators had to sign. And as you know, there's specifications in there for dot brands, for communities and geonames. So there are different kinds of additions that go in. And this comment period is open until the 13th of July. It was worked out in a bilateral way. ICANN staff worked with the registries themselves, the contract parties, on what they considered mutually acceptable contract amendments. That doesn't mean they're community acceptable. It just means it was acceptable between the ICANN staff and the registries themselves. I'd like to know if any of the companies on this call who also have brands, I'd like to know whether any brands were part of that registry working group. If anybody has an answer, please let us know. But one of the changes that I noted for you is that a registry wouldn't have to get ICANN's approval to change its domain name wholesale prices. And as you know, wholesale prices translate to retail prices once a registrar marks them up. Another change is that global amendments cannot amend the provisions of Spec 13 for brands. And I'll bet the dot brand guys on the call are probably very happy about that, since it suggests that you cannot touch Spec 13 unless it was mutually agreeable by the brand operators. So I'll take a cue. Is there anyone interested in participating in analyzing the amendments to the registry contract and drafting a BC comment? Phil, you're up first.
Thanks, Dave. And by no means do I mean to monopolize the comments today. It's just a couple of things I'm interested in. I believe I circulated to the BC list something the other day where I went through the explanation of this. Two things caught my eye. One is, I'm not sure that registry, you know, ICANN has never set prices for the new TLDs, but so I'm not sure they had to approve price changes, but they certainly, it eliminates any need to give notice to ICANN, and I'm concerned there not about about transparency, and I think it affects businesses who have acquired new TLD domains, whether it's for proactive or defensive purposes. There should be some transparency in the pricing process. The other one, which is a brand new provision that did not exist in the that does not exist in the current contract, allows ICANN to reduce or waive registry fees. And I don't know, I think we need to know what that is intended to get. It looks like it may be intended for registries which are not doing very well, and basically for cross-subsidization, where asking them to pay their full registry fees would be infeasible and they might have to shut down. So I think we need an explanation on that and need to decide whether we want ICANN propping up registries which are not making it in the marketplace. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. In the chat, I pasted the exact text that ICANN used to describe this change, and they're the ones that use the phrase ICANN's approval. You're right, it's one thing to give notice, it's another thing to obtain approval. So we'll probably need to dive into that, since ICANN is claiming that it was requiring approval. So Phil, can I put you down to be among the volunteers on drafting?
Yeah, absolutely. I've already looked into it. I don't want to be the lead. I'm just too burdened with other, you know, two working groups and council duties, but I'd be happy to participate in the drafting.
All right. We're grateful for that, and it's not even fair to ask you to lead with everything else that you're doing. Denise, Michelle, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just volunteering to be a drafter on this.
Thank you, Denise. Anyone else? Any brands on the phone who can tell us whether brands participated on that registry working group?
Could we put that question to the BC list? I suspect there's several people missing, but it would be good to know. And they may be able to also provide additional insight into the rationale behind some of the changes.
Okay. Okay, great. That's it for the current public comment. If you look at the item right before Channel 2, however, there's a PDP working group on reviewing all rights protection mechanisms in all GTLDs, not just new. We have the good fortune of having two of our members, Phil Corwin and J. Scott Evans. They're among the three co-chairs of that working group. And that working group sent a letter seeking input on questions they have. And that letter was the second attachment to the policy calendar. We have until July 5th to respond. And Phil, since I know we have you here on the call, can you shed some light on the nature of those questions and what you guys expect to do with the answers? Maybe I had surprised Phil with that question. I probably
Sorry. I thought I had unmuted. Yeah, I don't have that letter in front of me, but basically we're asking all the stakeholder and constituency groups to give us, you know, we're referring them to the questions that were laid out in the charter, in an appendix to the charter, but we're that doesn't necessarily cover all the questions. We want to make sure the all the groups understand this working group is up and running now. It's proceeding the first through January 2018. We're going to be reviewing the new TLD RPMs, and then we're going to move on to UDRP. And we want on the new TLD RPMs their feedback on what are there any questions that should be asked that aren't already out there that we things that they want our working group to look at. This is also to get people thinking about all this because we're going to have a cross-community session on this working group in Helsinki, so where we can people can air any concerns they have about the current rights protection mechanisms.
Thanks, Phil. I put all three questions into the chat.
Hi, it's Beth Allegretti. Can I chime in here about another working group?
Beth, before we jump to another working group, I did want to point out the third question is about what specific data points do we advise the working group to pursue in the data gathering? And it's really been the BC leading the charge on looking for specific key performance indicators and data points. And I'll bet that question is directed at us. So I think we're going to want to try to pay particular attention to that. Go ahead, Beth. Sorry.
Okay, so the other group that I'm on is the Next Generation Registry Directory Services to replace WHOIS working group, and we also have sent out a questionnaire just to make sure that all the constituencies see what's going on and if they have anything they want to add. What we're looking at right now are requirements for a new registration data service. So the list that we sent out are all a really broad list of documents, and we've summarized the requirements from each of those. And so what we're trying to do is get sort of the global aspect of all the requirements for a new service, you know, related to data, privacy, everything to do with it. And we are asking for all the groups to take a look at it to see if there's anything that they want to add, anything that's missing, any comments they want to make. I just took this on the other day. Apparently, the first outreach went out a couple weeks ago, so I will send that out to the list, and an informal one will be going out in the next day or so. So if everybody could, you know, just take a look and just to see where the group is at, if there's anything people might want to add, any areas that we need to focus on that we haven't, that would be great. And then once, if anyone has any comments, I will funnel those back to the working group. Thanks.
Beth, that's wonderful. Thank you very much. And right above channel, right above the end of channel three, I did indicate there are five BC members who are on that working group, yourself, Jeff Noakes, Susan Kawaguchi, Andrew Harris, and Alex Deacon. So we would look forward to you putting it on the top of our inbox about the kind of questions and when we would need to get back to them, and we'll coordinate a response. Thank you.
Great.
Phil, for you and Susan, then the next channel two item on here is for council. I'll note that the previous council meeting was back on the 12th of May, and I have links in there to the work that you guys did. And since the next council meeting's not until Helsinki, we don't have any agenda or motions for us to notice. But I turn it over to you and Susan to talk about council.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. I'll start and then let Susan chime in. Not that much going on in council, and we don't have any agenda, including possible resolutions yet for Helsinki. We haven't seen a proposed agenda yet. One development is that there was a ongoing search for a new liaison to the GAC from the council, from the GNSO, because Mason Cole is leaving that post. And we just got advised the other day by James Waddell that the just a few applications came in, and they didn't view the folks as sufficiently qualified, checking all the boxes they're looking for. So they're going to push that back and time it to complete the search at the final ICANN meeting in Hyderabad. They believe that some of the people who might have been interested are tied up on things that will be ending by the India meeting, and that they'll get a better pool of applicants then. We're still looking for BC reps on the GNSO GNSO Review Working Party, and I think you've all seen the proposed schedule for Helsinki. The one change I know that might still occur is that the cross-community consultation between the RPM Working Group and the community, right now it's scheduled on Wednesday, and it conflicts with another consultation that would, so it may be switched to a time slot on late Monday afternoon where nothing else is scheduled. But other than that, the schedule for Helsinki is pretty much getting locked down. And I'll stop there and see what Susan has to add. Thanks.
Thanks, Phil. I just want to go back to the point of the GAC rep from the GNSO. The IPC actually put forward a candidate, and for some reason, and I dug into this a little bit with staff yesterday, but there's a feeling that this should be a very confidential, no one should know who the candidates are because somebody might be disappointed if they didn't get the role. That's the way the process was developed previously, and, you know, for Mason's role candidacy. And I argued against that in the Marrakesh meeting because I thought we should always aim for transparency. And, you know, using the CCT review, you know, there was over 70 candidates. There was only 15 seats. So obviously somebody's not going to get picked in every in most seats. So they wouldn't. James would not divulge the candidate, but Paul McGrady did, and it was an IPC candidate that his background is having never. The person had never been a GNSO counselor, but works extensively with the GAC in his duties with INTA, and that single candidate was rejected, and they're looking for others. So I do think we have we should think about whether or not we back
the ITC in pushing forward more evaluation of their candidates. It's definitely the registries and registrars came out pushing back hard on Paul yesterday, and I just think that A, there should be no reason that at least all the counselors should know who applied, and B, should just because only one interested candidate applied during the specific time period given that we should immediately ignore that candidate and move on to an additional period of open application. So, I mean, do we want to back another group in the CSG, or do we want to hold off and just let the process go the way it's going? Looks like Denise has her hand up.
I do, Susan. Thank you. I have a basic concern about process here. I don't understand why the GNSO Council uses transparency in so many other selections it makes, such as the filling the chair on the board, or appointing people to the Consumer Protection Committee and other advisory committees, and yet for a GAC liaison, transparency doesn't apply, and furthermore, council input doesn't seem to apply, and I'm not sure why just the chair and vice chairs are selecting the GAC counselor, who presumably will facilitate communication between the GAC and the GNSO Council, at least, and probably more broadly with the GNSO. It also, at first blush, seems that someone who has extensive experience with the GAC could potentially be even more effective than someone who simply has, at some point in their life, served on the council but may not have any experience with the GAC. So I have a problem with the basic process of non-transparency and how this person is being selected, as well as apparently the initial decision to discard the one person who applied for this position. Further, I think there really is merit in looking at diversity of GAC liaisons in terms of, you know, Mason Cole being from the contracted party house, and presumably this person being from the non-contracted party house. I think in the spirit of, you know, diversity and being responsive broadly to the interests of the GNSO, this, again, I don't know the person, but this seems like a productive path to go. So I think there's a number of issues at play here, and I would support our counselors addressing all of them in a, you know, transparent and fulsome way. Thanks.
Bill, did you have comments?
Yeah. I wanted to thank you, Susan, for going into all the detail on that. I did read most of the exchanges yesterday, which got a little bit heated on the council list over this, but the chair did point out that the one of the vice chairs from the IPC and had agreed that the person wasn't qualified. But I think that's all water under the bridge. I think we should insist on a more transparent process going forward, since the decision apparently won't be made until the final ICANN meeting. This shouldn't be something that happens in a back room with just an announcement that's a fait accompli to the rest of the council.
Yeah, and I don't – I think it was a GAC GNSO working group or one of those that sort of came up with this process originally, but that doesn't mean that we can't revise the process. So I think we need to push forward a little bit and back our IPC brethren.
Yeah, so I think we should consult within the CSG and see if we're all in the same place on this and make sure it's brought up when council meets in Helsinki.
Yep. I would agree. I didn't have anything else except, Steve, I just wanted to note on the RPM questions that I put in the chat that I would volunteer to do the initial draft on those. And Andy was going to help, too.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Susan. Thank you for doing that. Appreciate it. Any other questions for our counselors right now? All right, seeing none, let me jump to the next channel, channel 3. I did want to indicate that the RCEP, this is the Registry Services Policy Review, the BC has gone back and forth with ICANN. This started with an inquiry that Denise Michelle led for us when we were at Maakash, of really pressing them to say, wait a minute, what about the comments that come in on RCEP requests? What are you doing to react to those comments? Who's commenting on them? How frequently? What kind of applications? And we put those questions to them, and yet ICANN staff keeps coming back and saying, we're not sure we understand your questions. What they did was publish the Global Domains Division's standard page on operational metrics, and I guess they were hoping that we'd be satisfied with that, but not the BC. We're looking for more detail about how they handle our comments. It's been one of the standard concerns that we've had. So Chantel was good at being persistent with staff back and forth. And what staff did is instead of giving us an answer, is asked for a conference call. And Chantel, I'm going to ask you to put the coordinates for that conference call into the chat, because any interested BC member who follows closely this RCEP process, and I'm looking at you, Denise, in particular, should join that call. It's today at 16:30 UTC, and I have it on my calendar as coming up at, that's 12:30 p.m. East Coast U.S. time, so roughly an hour from now. Get a quick show of hands, any BC members in general interested in joining that call? Thank you, Denise. Anyone else? Andy Abrams, the RCEP requests on geonames are where we have been so diligent at making comments. Is there a chance I can impose on your schedule to also join that call?
Steve, this is Andy. Unfortunately, I won't be able to make that call, but I'll definitely follow up with afterwards.
Okay, great. Thank you, Andy. And we'll definitely bring up the general concerns we have on the lack of responsiveness. But let me ask you this, Andy. Would you say that in response to the BC's concerns that almost all the RCEP geoname batches have been separated between those that are brand and those that are generic?
You know, I think the recent ones have been, and so we do appreciate that, because for, I think the first six or seven were not, and they were mixed, but I think the last three or four have been separated, and so we would like to see that trend continue.
Got it. I'll thank them for listening to us and state the expectation that they continue that way. Thanks. Denise, your hand is up. I know you're joining the call. Did you have any other comments?
Just for everyone's edification. This is really just a follow-up to get basic data and analysis about the RCEP program, which has been going on for a decade without any review or assessment. So just to be clear, the intent here is really just to get data and analysis, and it's been 3 months since our request, and the GDD staff hasn't really even fulfilled the basic, particularly relating to public comments. And you'll recall that there's been an exponential increase in RCEP public comments that clearly the community is having a lot of trouble keeping up with. So it's appropriate to take a step back and just look at how the RCEP is working these days. And so really that's the impetus for our initial request. And now I guess we have to talk to the staff to get them to fulfill our initial request, but this isn't really a discussion about any changes or things we like or dislike about the RCEP. Rather, the intent here is really just to get basic information and review the program. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Before I send it back to you, Chris, if folks go to the third page of the policy calendar, what I've done is remind everyone who's interested in Workstream 2 on accountability. I've reminded, it was Phil Corwin, Alex, Andrew, Paul Mitchell, Chris Wilson, Andrew Mack. I've recorded in page three all of the areas that you thought you were interested in. So I've reminded everyone about the face-to-face meeting in Helsinki on the 25th of June. But there's something new here. Those of you who are interested in observing or participating should please fill out the Google Doc, and I have a hyperlink right to it in the document, anytime before the 25th of June. And that's where you indicate your interest, an expression of interest at being part of any of the different streams, the nine different sub-projects within Workstream 2. I'll paste that link in the chat one more time, because it doesn't, and Barbara Warner, I see you brought your name up, but and that's great. I'll add you to my list. But what you've got to do is click on that link and update the document so that ICANN knows you're interested. That way you'll get the emails from them about Workstream 2. You'll be on a specific list for Workstream 2 under the sub-project. Okay, everyone, that's it for me. Chris?
Thanks, Steve. Thanks, everybody. It'll be a busy Sunday, that first Sunday in Helsinki with all that work kicking off. Why don't I go ahead and quickly turn to the CSG report. I know Cheryl Miller had planned to join us today. I unfortunately can't, but I know that she's sort of back in action now at in her role at Verizon, her regular role at Verizon, so I expect that she'll be able to provide us our regular reports going forward now that she's refocused back on her normal day-to-day work product at Verizon. Just real quick, there will be it looks like I think we're locked in. Chantel, you can confirm for me if I'm incorrect, but we are locked in for a CSG meeting with the registry and registry stakeholder groups on June 29th. I think it's that Wednesday during the lunch period in Helsinki. I think it's still to be determined exactly how many people from each constituency can attend that meeting. I know due to room size constraints, it would be difficult, I think, to have, you know, all BC members, all IPC members, all ISPC members, et cetera, attending. So I think that will be something that we'll have to run down. The CSG XCOM will have to run down in the coming days to finalize the exact numbers. But I think as of now, Centel looking at the chat, looks like it may be just for leadership. But I think we may have left it where it's possible if we can accommodate a couple other members from each constituency who have a strong interest in the meeting, we could perhaps do that. I will. We have the CSG has an XCOM call on Monday morning, June 13th, or I guess Monday afternoon on the 13th, and we can. I will seek to get clarification on who can attend that meeting. Regardless of that, we'll obviously have a report back out to the BC on what was discussed and any steps forward from that meeting. I also on the CSG XCOM call, I will Susan and Phil, I will raise the GNSO GAC liaison sort of issue, if you will, and flag it for folks on that call. Might as well take advantage of that opportunity and see if we can come to further discussion on process forward on that issue. Denise, I see your hand raised.
Yes, thanks. Particularly if this CSG registrar meeting is going to be closed, could you make sure that there's an agreed-upon sort of agenda or list of issues that will be discussed and shared with the BC in advance?
Thanks. Yes, and that, I expect that will be on the agenda for the call on Monday with the CSG XCOM. So when the June 29th meeting are finalized, I will certainly send it all out to the BC for everyone's knowledge. Any other questions on that? Okay. I will real quickly also note, so I think you all saw I sent out sort of an APB to the BC membership a few days ago, early in the week, regarding trying to get a BC rep to participate in a drafting team regarding process for selection of someone to fill board seat 14. As you know, the IPC and ISPCP each have nominated somebody, and as well as the other folks from the The non-commercial stakeholder group have also nominated a couple of people. I think in being consistent with the fact that each constituency has nominated one person, we would the BC also would just nominate one person. Thankfully, we've received three people who volunteered to be that rep. So I think in the interest of comity, I think it would be best if the membership agrees that we would sort of put this to a ballot among the BC members to determine who that among the three volunteers who would be the BC rep on the drafting team. Is there anybody that would not oppose, I guess, to doing a ballot? If we didn't do a ballot, then I guess the XCOM could make that determination. But I think it would be more democratic if the BC writ large would determine who that BC rep would be on that drafting team. Is there any opposition to doing that? And I see, Arnold, I see you've recognized that Marilyn has, in your words, more qualified that you could step down. Certainly up your prerogative, and that's fine. I certainly thank you for volunteering in the first place. I know that still leaves Marilyn and Lawrence, who have volunteered for this, so we still would have two people for one position. So I wonder if we still should not have a ballot discussion, a ballot vote, I guess, on that. Anyone, I guess, opposed to that? If not, then we'll go ahead and get that launched, and we can have the BC hopefully very soon make a determination as to whether Marilyn or Lawrence would be the BC rep on that drafting team. I know that there might be an expectation that the drafting team will actually meet informally in Helsinki one of those days just to sort of have a meeting of the minds and start thinking about the work product. So that has nothing's been finalized on that front, but I know that there's been some initial discussion about doing that. So I hope that we get somebody, get our BC rep named before Helsinki so that person could participate in any discussion that may occur during the meeting. So we'll get that started. I think that's it for CSG report. But I did want to quickly turn before I turn to Jensen real fast. To Andrew Mack, if you're still available, maybe talk quickly about the letter you've drafted we've had some revisions to it regarding the meeting location transparency issue. I think it sounds like there's a lot of support for the letter as currently edited and revised. So I'm wondering if we can go ahead and finalize that and send that off to the proper parties within ICANN. Perhaps, Andrew, do you have any further thoughts on that?
For me, I'm fine. Thanks to everyone who contributed in. I think we did a really good BC job of it, and it's pretty clear. And if anybody has any more things that they'd like to add, by all means.
And I just look. Thank you, Andrew. I see the letter. You know, Chantel's posted the letter in the chat room or on the Adobe room. One question I had, and this is really completely off the top of my head, is whether is the BC interested in seeing if other constituency groups or stakeholder groups would want to join us in this letter. I don't know if that maybe at this late hour maybe too hard to do, but it just occurred to me, especially in the light of the fact that I'll be having discussions with other CSG folks here in the next day or two, whether we would want to see if we could get additional buy-in. I may, frankly, may carry more weight, additional weight, if we have the whole CSG with us or others. But I'm just really throwing that out there as a brainstorm. If we don't think that's necessary or feasible, then I'm happy to not pursue that. Steve, I see your hand raised.
Only to say that it would be, I think it's a great idea. It'll magnify the impact of the letter signed by three constituencies like the CSG, even better if we were able to get the NCSG to join us, and I'll bet they would. So since there's no time pressure to get this done, there's no deadline, why not allow another 24 hours for BC members to suggest edits, and then under your leadership, approach the other chairs of constituencies to see if we can expand the signatures. I think that's a great idea. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Any other thoughts from folks on that? I'm happy to do it. I think it's a good letter. I think it's worth seeing if we can get additional buy-in. So I will, as Steve said, why don't we give folks within the BC another day, maybe by COB tomorrow, to look at the letter and any, provide any further comments or edits to it, and then we'll assume if we haven't heard anything by the end of tomorrow, then we can go ahead and shop it around to other constituencies, stakeholder groups, and see if we can get buy-in from them. So, terrific. I think that's it for as far as CSG report. Any other questions, thoughts, concerns on that? I know we're very close to the top of the hour. Is Chantel back online?
Yes, Chris, I'm right here.
Good, Jimson, if you could.
My line?
Yep. Go ahead, Jimson.
Okay. My line usually get cut off 10 minutes to the hour because I get called earlier, the 10 minutes to the hour. Firstly, the FY17 invoices started to go out, and we also informed that we have some euro challenges. We had a euro sign, currency sign, not there. So, but payment is in euro, and I believe you all understand that, especially that our bank accounts in Spain. An updated BC FY17 budget proposal will be forwarded to members before the next meeting so that we could look at it and possibly approve the FY budget proposal by Helsinki in June 27. And then the FY17 budget requests, I did provide feedback at the last meeting. We said that there is just one more request. We are waiting for ICANN to give us the feedback. And we've gotten that. And that is with respect to one additional travel support we requested. That will not be forthcoming because it has been deferred until after the IANA transition. So it's part, it will be part of the post-IANA reconsideration. So, but Chantel, perhaps you could send your comprehensive summary of ICANN response to budget requests to the league. Thank you. Then lastly, on operation, we have begun the process of migration to member clicks application, as you're already aware. So during this weekend, if you're accessing the website, you may have difficulty reaching biscons.org. But by Monday, after the IP propagation will have been fully resolved, to member clicks platform will be able to access biscons.org. Please know that the member click application is still work in progress, and new ideas are welcome. But when we are through, we'll have a session to go over the application, especially the members section and the social media section. And finally, I would like to urge members to do a more critical review of the charter so that it can be finalized for our AIN application process. We really want that finalized so that we can even have online payment on this new application. So that's it for me. Chris, back to you.
Thank you, Jimson, and thank you for all the hard work on the MemberClicks migration. It's been a lot of work, and you should be commended for leading the charge on that, so thank you. It's now the top of the hour, 1 minute after the hour, so I will be very, very quick on any other business. Just reminding folks that there will be a BC Open meeting Monday, June 27th in Helsinki. We have confirmed that Dan O'Neill, who's the consultant, outside consultant for ICANN, working on the pilot project, policy development pilot project, will be speaking to us just for 15 minutes, providing us an update on the status of the project and answering any questions folks might have. That meeting we're going to do from 12:30 to 1:30 during the lunch hour in Helsinki, and we're going to have him launched at the beginning of the meeting so we can move quickly after he's provided his input. I think I reminded folks that we we'll have a call. I will have a call along with Steve and Jimson with the new ICANN CEO, Jorn Marby, also on Monday, and we'll hear from him about his vision, I guess, for ICANN and perhaps any other thoughts he may be having with regard to the transition, et cetera. Just following up on Denise's point from our last call, I certainly will raise the issue that, you know, we would like additional outreach from him to the broader business community, not simply just BC leadership, we'll get that. Lastly, we've got, as Steve mentioned, we'll have the call from BC XCOM as well as additional interested members with the GDD team momentarily, next half hour, regarding the OSEP data gathering process. I will say also because we have the BC open meeting on Monday the 27th, currently we were scheduled to have a BC meeting call on the 23rd. Because we have one scheduled for that following Monday, I don't see any need to have a call on the 3rd for the BC members call. However, I am inclined to have reserve that time, and I think the XCOM agrees that we have that time reserved for a final review and vote on the revised BC charter. We had a nice call on May 31st going over the charter. Andy Adams led that discussion. We had some good substantive discussion on it, some good edits and revisions that were made, and Andy circulated those around, I think, earlier this week. I know there was an additional discussion with John Berard and Andy. I don't know if that we've run that discussion down or not, but regardless, I think we need to sort of think about closing the loop on a review of the revised charter. So my expectation and goal is to have a call with this hour reserved on the 23rd for final review and vote on the charter. If there continues to be discussion and uncertainty about it at that time, then we can certainly delay a vote. But I think I'd like to get us thinking about doing that on the 23rd. So I will have Chantel schedule that and send it out. Please, for those that have not yet taken a look at the revised charter, please look at the most recent iteration that Andy sent around earlier this week, provide thoughts, comments, edits via email to all, and we can and finalize this. So in lieu of a full BC members call, we'll have a charter review call and vote call on the 23rd. Is that doable for folks?
And Chris, this is Andy. Just to clarify, the revised version of the charter after the meeting has only been sent to the XCOM and the charter discussion group, and so we're still kind of circling around in that group for final revisions. And so I'll recirculate the final version to the entire membership soon, I think, once we sort of resolve the last couple of issues there.
Great. Thank you, Andy. And thank you for the clarification. I missed that, so I apologize. So good. Okay, well then, for folks to be on the lookout then for the most recent iteration of the revised charter, and then start proceeding with the belief that we'll have a vote on it on the 23rd. And so that we welcome folks, and we'll of course send a note out to the full list about that as well. But for those that are on the call today, please mark that in your calendar. Any other thoughts, questions, concerns? Okay, great. If not, then we look forward to talking to you all via email, of course, and then also talking to you all on the 23rd during the charter call. So thank you all very much for participating. Have a wonderful day.